Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, on a Wednesday, what a beautiful job by Fox Sports. Look at our studio live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. If you are driving around and you're listening to us on our 300 radio affiliates and XM Sirius and podcasts and all that stuff, they have gone out beyond, above, and beyond the call of duty. Our Christmas set is absolutely remarkable. Tip of the cap to the production people who did this.
They always do a great job decorating for the holidays. It's very, very charming. It'll put you in the holiday spirit.
This puts me in the hall. I got my sweater on today.
Well, it's very cold in here, too. So it's literally like it's a little winter wonderland in here today.
Well, it's great. That's the voice of Joy Taylor. It's great to have you in. So I don't know if you noticed yesterday. I'm not really an awards guy, but the Pro Bowl selections came out, and that's... You know, we find out how good all these players are, and Baltimore had 12. Boy, Lamar Jackson, oh my. He has 11 teammates who are unbelievable. He's got a Pro Bowl, a running back, and a Pro Bowl right guard, and a Pro Bowl tight end, and a Pro Bowl fullback, and a Pro Bowl left tackle, and holy, a Pro Bowl kicker, and a bunch of Pro Bowl defensive players. And then the Pro Bowl votes came out for Seattle's Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson, he has one, and he doesn't get a throw to him or hand to him, and he doesn't protect him. It's Bobby Wagner. He's on the other side of the ball. They're probably not even barely in the same locker room. That's interesting. Most valuable player. Now, I've always felt when they created the award, a bunch of people sat in a room, and the word valuable was important. The word most wasn't, and the word player wasn't, because there's a lot of awards. The key word when all these people, men, women, sat in a room was, what's the key word in the middle? Valuable. It's not most improved player. We've got that. It's the most valuable player. So what does value mean? Value to me, and I take pride in this and what I do, the inability to replace somebody easily. It's not MPP, most productive player. Not most talented player. It's not what the awards are. It's most valuable player. Howard Stern to FM radio. He left, dried up. How's Cleveland been since LeBron left? Dried up. How are the Niners for about 4 years after Harbaugh left? Embarrassing. Those were Howard Stern, LeBron, Jim Harbaugh in the NFL. Unbelievably valuable. Okay. Russell Wilson, one Pro Bowler to support him. Lamar Jackson's got 11 guys, 6 offense and special teams to help him. Now, I get that Lamar's a better story, and writers who vote on this stuff love stories. He's fun, he's exciting, he's unique, he's fresh, he's new, he's highly productive. But the word is valuable. Baltimore without Lamar Jackson, there's a lot of quarterbacks you could put in there. That's a pretty talented team. He makes them better. That's not the argument. Seattle's a bad football team without Russell Wilson. And they are now the number one seed in the tougher conference. The inability to replace you. Who in God's name in the NFL? Aaron Rodgers we always argue that it doesn't have any talent. Aaron Rodgers has more. Kansas City's got 6. Baltimore's got 12. Folks, what Russell Wilson's doing with the 31st best pass blocking line, below average special teams, defense is 27th in total yards, 29th against the pass. I mean, outside of a couple of decent running backs, guy's got nothing to work with. There's a huge difference between talented. J.J. Watt, to me, was talented. But the Texans are in first place again without him. Blake Griffin, to me, was super talented. Clippers are better since he left. Pistons still stink with him or without him. There's a lot of athletes that are talented, and there's a lot of athletes that are productive, but how valuable are they? I'm not saying Lamar isn't valuable, but it's called most valuable player. I don't think there's anybody close. In fact, there's 3 players in the last decade in the NFL that, to me, are just more valuable than any player. And it's not Tom Brady, because they won 11 games when he left. Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers, and Russell Wilson. I mean, what's the Seattle Seahawks franchise story without Russell Wilson? I'm from there. You know what it is? A lot of losses. And, man, remember Steve Largent? That's the franchise. That's the franchise. No, it's not Pete Carroll. Because Pete Carroll was there for 2 years and went 7-9 and 7-9. Well, Richard Sherman. Well, he left. And they're the number one seed in the NFC. The word valuable is the word everybody struggled in the room to come up with when they named this award. Because they have most blank player in other sports, and there's other words. Valuable? One Pro Bowler? Other guys got left tackle, left guard, kicker, running back, fullback. And by the way, although not Pro Bowlers, way better receivers. Just saying, I know he's not the cool story. Do you know Russell Wilson? Here's a pretty good story for you. Is the second leading passer rating guy in league history. Never received one MVP vote. 8 years. I think that is a pretty cool story. All right, let's shift to this. Report. Steelers were among teams Odell Beckham encouraged the trade for him. Ooh, that stings a little. So now the four teams that have been rumored to be after him, or he's been rumored to be interested in, are New England, Pittsburgh, Seattle, and the 49ers. What do they all have in common? Great coaches, and they win. Odell Beckham, folks, wants to win. He didn't put the four biggest markets. He didn't put the four teams with the most cap room. Odell Beckham's like, I'm gonna win. I want to win games, so I want to go to New England. By the way, New England doesn't pamper stars. Odell's not looking to be pampered. He's not. Pittsburgh's defined by Big Ben. He doesn't even want to be the biggest star on the team. Seattle, way up there. Way up there in the Pacific Northwest. He doesn't have to be in Paris, New York, or L.A. And the 49ers. I mean, they don't even have their stadium in San Francisco. All four have in common, wants to win. Not a drug guy, not a crazy in-season guy. He doesn't fight with coaches. He didn't get in arguments with. He's I want to win guy. He's Randy Moss. He's a little needy. He wants a little attention. I get that. I'm Odell Beckham Jr. today. I demand a trade. And here's why. Because Odell Beckham Jr. is the only NBA player, at least the first, in the NFL. He's global. Most NFL players go to American colleges. They're domestic. NBA guys are global. They come from Germany. They come from France. They come from Spain. They come from out of the country. NBA is a global league. Mostly the NFL is a domestic league. OBJ is a global star. He has double the Instagram followers, double of even guys like Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes. He's also the first NFL player to get an NBA sort of shoe deal. He's the NFL's first NBA player. And what do NBA players do? They're like, I'll take a little less money. I'm going to win. Do you think Anthony Davis is happier now that he's taking a little less in L.A. or making more money and losing in New Orleans? Think Paul George now is a little happier in Los Angeles? Yeah, AD got a couple of weeks of pushback, and Paul George, boo, I can't believe you left us, boo. But nobody cares because we embrace NBA stars, the Miami Heatles, that take a little less because they want to win games. Kevin Durant, okay, I'll take less. You can have Andre Iguodala in Golden State. We don't really punish athletes when they take less money when they want to win games. In fact, I think we hate them more when they just go for the money and don't care about winning. That, to me, is ludicrous. I mean, I get wanting money, but once you get up to $300 million, what's it matter? You want to win games? You want to sit home and watch playoff games? Odell Beckham has told you, the four rumored teams, Seattle, 49ers, New England, Pittsburgh, he wants to win. He's not asking to go to media centers. He's not asking to be the highest paid. He didn't ask for the guys with the most cap space. He's just looking for guys well-coached, win games. Mike Tomlin, Pete Carroll, Kyle Shanahan. That's what he's asking for, consistent winners, and Cleveland doesn't. And, you know, so when I look at this, I don't think even Cleveland would hold it against him. I think he should demand a trade. I think he should go to privately go to the general manager, John Dorsey. And if John says no, then go public and be a little uncomfortable. Cleveland needs offensive line help, not weapons help. So Cleveland can get offensive line help. They're not going to find it all in the draft, and they need three new offensive linemen, maybe four. So if it's not going to hurt his brand, it's kind of on brand. He's an NBA guy. He's a star. We get that stars move. This is on brand for him. It's not off brand. This would be off brand for, you know, wholesome Tom Brady or wholesome Eli Manning. Or this is on brand for him. It would be weird for Drew Brees to demand a trade because we link him to New Orleans and Russell Wilson to Seattle. Outside of Cleveland, everybody would get it. And Cleveland's been so bad for years that we don't really hold it against people. Even LeBron for leaving. We really don't. Cleveland did. We really don't. OBJ, you're the only NBA player in the NFL. Demand a trade privately first, public if they say no. It's time.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
In Los Angeles right now, the two best teams in the NBA are the Lakers right now are the best team. The Clippers are building sort of for the championship, resting some of their stars. It's called load management, primarily Kawhi Leonard. So LeBron took a not-so-thinly veiled shot the other night at Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers and load management. Here it is.
If I'm healthy, I play.
That's just going to be your approach all year?
I mean, that should be the approach. I mean, I don't know how many games I got left in my career. I don't know how many kids that may show up to a game that they're to come see me play. And if I sit out, then what? You know, that's my obligation. My obligation is to play for my teammates. And if I'm healthy, then I'm going to play. If coach sits me out, then I'm not healthy. And it's just that simple.
I prefer that, of course, for my stars. LeBron, a little bit of a hypocrite. He's taken some nights off, but I've never thought of LeBron as load management guy. I mean, he did start the trend. I think he took a night off, and he called it load management, but I've always thought he's a guy that puts in the work. And then there's the Clippers with Kawhi Leonard, who clearly has a strategy, and Doc Rivers fired back at the Lakers and LeBron.
It's our philosophy. I don't know what theirs are. You know, I think theirs is whatever LeBron says it is, to be honest. That makes a lot of sense to me. But, no, I think I like what we're doing. I think it's the smart thing to do. And, you know, who knows? We'll see at the end.
Let me just say this. Load management works not only for Kawhi, it works for the Clippers. You can go right now and get a Clipper ticket for $12. The Clippers have been the exciting regular season team. It was called Lob City. And nobody cares. They got rid of all of them. They didn't take over Los Angeles. And when they had Lob City, they didn't have two NFL teams in town. They didn't have that new soccer team. They've been the regular season team that everybody talks about. And it didn't move the needle whatsoever. It didn't get them a new arena. It didn't get them talked about more than the losing Lakers at the time. There's a seismic shift is needed in Los Angeles. When you share an arena with the number one brand in a sport, you don't make up ground by beating them in November. You gain ground by beating them in the Western Conference Finals and then winning a championship. So the Clippers are all in creating a seismic brand shift, the kind that steps on the Lakers in the Conference Finals. The team is deeper and more rested. And then they win a championship and they can get an arena out of it. They're not getting an arena out of it, winning more games in the regular season. But this is where the Lakers are different. The Lakers have more titles, 16, than the Clippers have playoff appearances, 14. The Clippers charge $12 for a good ticket. The Lakers charge $1,200. They have to validate that to the fans who come. They can't be all about the championship, although privately, it's all about the championship. People pay a lot of money, and they want to be entertained, and people save all year in Los Angeles. In towns outside of the city to take their kids to one game because that's how expensive it is. And it matters when you're the number one brand in the NBA on a nightly basis trying to deliver for the consumer. The Clippers give tickets away. Even this year, you can get them pretty cheap. And there, in a distracted sports market, the Lakers are the number one brand. It is a massive business. Titles are great, and they want them more than anything. But there is a burden of responsibility to your consumers. That's why they re-signed Kobe for 2 years. Remember that? And it didn't help their young players because Kobe got people excited and you left driving home after watching the Lakers lose by 4, but Kobe had 38 and you felt good about the experience. The Lakers are a concert. The Clippers are a recital. So the Clippers, the load management thing, the only way to create a seismic shift in Los Angeles where the Lakers are the number one brand and the Dodgers are number two and USC when they're hot is number three and the Rams are going to be number four and the Clippers are somewhere in the 5-6. How do the Clippers get to two? They'll never overtake the Lakers, but how do they get to two? Or maybe 2A behind the Dodgers? A championship. So they're all in for that. They're all in for that. Load management works for them. They're two different business models. And for the Lakers, you drive, you pay, you want to see your stars.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Nick Wright, First Things First, Coward Global Satellite Network. I don't know if you noticed that Tom Brady had no Pro Bowlers. No Pro Bowlers on the offense. What did you make of that, Nick Wright?
It's tough for skill position guys to make Pro Bowls when the quarterback's dropping balls at your feet and sailing them over your head. You got to really feel in this offense for Lacoste and for Mohamed Sanu that they could have maybe gotten there with a better opportunity. Sony Michel maybe feels like he could have made it if defenses had to respect the passing game at all and weren't stacking the box. So, yeah, I did notice it, and I feel bad for those guys that are having to deal with a 42-year-old quarterback who is not allowing them to exhibit their obvious greatness, Colin Cowherd.
I want to go to a Drew Brees takeaway because I've said this before. I call it the Great Eight. Eight greatest quarterbacks I've ever seen play. I put Brees in there 2 years ago, and people said, you're out of your mind. And I just said, it's not always just about, the MVP awards. The leadership, blah, blah, blah. I don't have Aaron Rodgers or Favre in there, though they're very close. I don't have Steve Young in there. I don't have Russell Wilson, though Russell's close. But you did something the other day with quarterback tiers, and you got some pushback on the Brees conversation. Fire away.
Yep. So, yeah, I'm just going to do from the merger to now. I'm sure, certain Johnny Unitas was a great player, but I don't know that anyone actually ever saw him play. So I'm going to set those the Sammy balls aside. There's three tiers. There's the undisputed GOAT, Tom Brady. Then in the next tier, there is Peyton Manning, Joe Montana, and I would include John Elway. Some people would say Marino should be ahead of Elway. I can't get over the 5 Super Bowl appearances with Elway. And then there's the tier Drew Brees is in, along with Favre, Rodgers, and Marino. And the reason I wanted to make this point is I knew there was going to be some momentum towards, well, actually, was Drew Brees better than Peyton Manning? They played in a Super Bowl and Brees won. Brees now has all of the records. And that makes a lot of sense, except we watched the games and there was never a period, and I love Drew, where Drew Brees was considered the best quarterback in football. There was never a moment where people would say he was better than Peyton Manning. And the analogy I used was, if you didn't ever watch baseball and you just looked at the record books, you would say, oh, Hank Aaron might be the greatest player of all time. But people who actually watch would tell you, as great as he wasn't even the best player of his era. That
right.
was Willie Mays.
Right.
Even though Hank has everything more than Willie Mays, that's where Brees is. But one thing that I do want to say in to Brees' credit, when Peyton Manning threw his 538th touchdown pass, it was a season where he had been benched and was at the very end. When Tom Brady throws his 539th touchdown pass, it's as a 42-year-old who can't get these skill position guys in the Pro Bowl that we just discussed. Drew Brees did it in a game where he was 29 of 30 and was perfect. So the fact that at this late in his career he's playing at this high of a level is a testament to him. But nobody actually believes he was ever better than Peyton Manning, which was some of the conversation yesterday that I tried to quell a bit.
Yeah, I think, by the way, I think your tiers are, I don't agree necessarily with tier three, but I actually think your argument's good, smart, and the top four I think you have right. Let's now shift gears.
Thanks.
to Baker Mayfield. Pro Football Focus has loved him forever. They're acknowledging now he's Dwayne Haskins. You loved him. And I said, slow down. Slow down. Police video, grabbing stuff. Quarterback's a grown-up position. He's too immature. Can you acknowledge today that you were a little hyper, a little on Baker, or do you still grab the it's Freddie Kitchens' fault?
Well, I think it's obviously Freddie Kitchens hasn't helped. I also think that the moment we had before the year where I had Baker ranked ahead of Deshaun Watson and you asked me if I have a television, you appear to be ahead in that argument. I will concede that. However, I am a person who once upon a time bought up a bunch of Blockbuster stock when it was at like 18 cents because I was like, well, how much lower can it go? And the answer was to zero and I lost all the money. But right now, I'm not saying Baker's the Blockbuster stock. What I'm saying is it's not going to get worse than this. I saw him be brilliant at Oklahoma. I saw him be excellent last year. Now, you made a very compelling case about what box does he check. And he sure seems to still think he's a better athlete than he actually is when it comes to escapability. I think with the right coach, with the better system, he can recapture some of his rookie season. But at the moment, you appear to be closer to right than me, but I'm not yet abandoning Baker Mayfield.
One more football topic. OBJ is global. He's not domestic. Most of our football stars, even Brady, are domestic stars. NBA basketball, it's a global product. We saw the NBA China deal blow up. It's a part of the business. OBJ is the first NBA player in the NFL. He has double the Instagram followers. He spends a lot of time in Europe in the offseason. He is a shoe deal, which just did not exist, even for Brady and Rodgers and Mahomes. I think he needs to demand a trade from Cleveland. I think he's a good kid who's a little needy. Aren't we all at 24? He's Randy Moss. I don't have to worry about effort, quality of human being. I have to worry about that. A little needy. Look at me a little bit. I get it. Stars are like that. But I do think he's an NBA business model. We would be okay with him moving if he went to a better team. And the four teams we've heard rumors about are all winning teams. I think he should demand a trade to John Dorsey privately, and if not, doesn't work, go public. And Anthony Davis, it be a little uncomfortable for 2 months. What say you? Is it nuts? You know him.
No, I don't think it's nuts. I don't buy the report that he was asking the Steelers to trade for him. I know they're a great franchise, but they are unsettled at quarterback and they play in really cold weather. Neither of those things seem to be super attractive to Odell. But Odell does deserve to play with a good quarterback for the first time in his career. I thought he was getting that with Baker. He has not. So much of the sideline stuff has to do with lack of winning, not lack of touches. And the truth of the matter is, he now, as much as I love him, he's got as many great seasons, three, as he does what the hell happened seasons, three. He's going to be in year seven, and these careers can be shorter than we think. So if he does get moved, it is incumbent upon him to make the next place work.
Yeah. Finally, I like and prefer LeBron's load management strategy. But I can.
Oh, thank you for asking me about this.
Yes.
I'm so happy you're asking me about this, but go ahead.
But
go ahead.
The Clippers have been fun in the regular season and exciting, and nobody gives a rip, and we still think of them as second tier. They're going all in on a title. It's the only seismic home run they can hit to change the paradigm in LA where they're just not another team. I get what they're doing. I just don't like it. I prefer the Lakers LeBron way. Your thoughts?
Well, listen, of course LeBron's right that you have a responsibility to a degree to play when you're healthy. No one is saying you got to play all 82, but the load management has hurt the league because people are acting as if what Kawhi is doing is standard. It's only standard for Kawhi. No one else is missing anywhere close to the number of games Kawhi is missing, which is why Doc Rivers' comments were so incredibly rich when he's like, the Lakers do whatever LeBron wants. You coach a team who had a player come to you and say, I will sign here if You move heaven and earth to acquire this specific player. And by the way, I'm only going to show up to work 3 out of 4 games. And they said, no problem, Mr. Leonard. What else would you like? But there's a reason for this. And this is why it's important. Because the same day Doc Rivers took a shot at LeBron, Kevin Garnett was on Bill Simmons' podcast and he said, oh yeah, we had LeBron shook. We defeated LeBron, and the only reason the Heat beat those Celtics is because basically the league had the fix in. We have Paul Pierce go on television all the time and say that he's a better player than LeBron, that LeBron got unfair help. We now have Kevin Garnett saying the fix was in and Doc Rivers taking a shot. What do all those guys have in common? They still are not over that LeBron James ended the Big Three era in Boston, and then to add salt to the wound, took Ray Allen from him as well. That's when Doc Rivers then left. That's when KG and Pierce then went to Brooklyn. That's when it all fell apart. So as much as Doc Rivers can be respected, his commentary on LeBron James should be understood. There is a history there, and his commentary on one player controlling an organization, you got to look in the mirror, pal, because the Claw controls the Clippers more than any player controls any organization in all of sports right now.
I agree with that. Nick Wright, great seeing you. First things first, have a happy holiday, buddy.
You too, man. Merry Christmas to all you guys. Talk to you soon.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Eagles-Dallas play this weekend. I've learned something in my years broadcasting. The bigger the game, the more ridiculous the reaction after it, and the more ridiculous the projections before it. WIP Radio, Philadelphia. This is a sports town that thought Nick Foles was better than Carson Wentz. I'm not joking. There's no punchline. They really thought that. Nick Foles, by the way, is now carrying a clipboard for a fourth-place team. Nick Foles didn't win a game this year. Nick Foles got replaced by something called Gardner Minshew. This town thought Nick Foles was better than Carson Wentz. So when Philadelphia talks, just smile. It's not worth getting into an argument. Let them have their pale ale at the bar and get into fistfights. So this is an organization and a fan base that just doesn't know what they're talking about most of the time. So WIP Radio, you call and scream a lot on that station, apparently, for Nick Foles, is saying this is the biggest game, referendum game for Carson Wentz. Here's the article this week. Referendum, biggest game in his career. Really? So Carson Wentz loses. Is he not talented? Jason Garrett wins. Is he now a great coach? Dak wins. Is he an all-time great franchise top five quarterback? Dallas wins. They're 8-7. Are they not still underachieving? What changes in this game? Nothing. This game's not a referendum for anything. It's just a game where one of these two underachieving messes make the playoffs and will be the weakest NFC playoff team. Remember what I said several months ago? These teams met, and the world went crazy on it. Oh, my God, this means Dallas is great. And what I said then 3 months ago, 2 months ago, is what I'll say now about this game. Philadelphia and Dallas, neither of these teams are good enough to put the other away. They've got massive secondary issues in Philadelphia. Both have brutal schedules. I think the loser of this game is fine. I mean, as fine as somebody is in that division. That's exactly how I feel today. These are not good enough teams to separate from anybody, but they're talented enough that they can sort of mostly hang with almost anybody not named Baltimore. There is no referendum on this game. Carson Wentz got his money, has total support from the owner, absolute support from the coach and GM. He's won games back-to-back weeks with nobody to throw to. Nobody to throw to. I mean, it's remarkable they're winning games. They beat Green Bay when they actually had some components, but they've mostly not had them all year. But the bigger the game, the more we overreact after it, and the more projection we offer before it. This is not this game means nothing. I mean, this is the idea that three quarters of Philadelphia thought Nick Foles, who just got beat out by Gardner Minshew, was better than Carson Wentz, shows you. This happens in these cold weather cities. They like sports more than warm weather cities. And it's very obvious why. In warm weather cities, you can go outside, you don't watch as much TV, you bail on your team when they're average. There's more stuff to do in Miami than there is in Buffalo. And in Miami, if your team's bad, you just go outside and there's cute girls, cute guys, go to bars, Port City, restaurant. Buffalo, it's -9 and snowing. You stay inside and you watch a story about the Bills. So these cold weather cities, they get their great fan bases. They love their teams. But that creates sort of a intensity and passion that borders on absurd. And Philadelphia can be just absurd when it comes to their quarterbacks, where they've not had very many good ones. In fact, you can argue they've never had a great one. Randall Cunningham, you had Jaws, you had Donovan McNabb. They're certainly all good. If they had the all-time great, not really. Carson Wentz is the most talented player they've ever had at that position in the history of the city. And an hour ago, you thought Nick Foles was better. There's no referendum on anything in this game. It's kind of amazing that Philadelphia is still hanging around despite the fact that the first month they had cluster injuries in the secondary. The second month they had cluster injuries on the offensive line. The third month they had cluster injuries now in the wide receiver unit. He's throwing to tight ends and running backs you've never heard of. In fact, I was looking at this morning. One of the winning touchdowns last couple of weeks was to Greg Ward. 2 years ago, he was a quarterback for the Texans. Or no, the Houston Cougars. My bad. Wrong Houston. Houston Cougars. He was a quarterback in college. And then earlier this year, he played in the AAF, San Antonio Commanders, a year ago. And that's one of his winning touchdown throws. So this game's not a referendum on anything.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, staff knows what I like. Staff knows I like the minutiae of football. The Senior Bowl is one of my favorite weeks of the year. Jim Nagy is now the new executive director. You were a scout for, you've got 4 Super Bowl rings. One of the best scouts in the game. 18 years as a scout. You helped for years the Seahawks and the Patriots. 2 interesting cultures. So let's start, Jim, with that.
Okay.
Pete's high emotion. Pete loves young players. Bill tends to, in my opinion, like older players, a little more rigidity. So I think they're kind of different cultures. Did you see any similarities between the two?
None. Absolutely none. No, that was the rewarding thing of working for both franchises, because you can see you can do totally polar opposite things and get the same result. Just, you know, the mantra in New England is do your job, right? And in Seattle, it's we're all in. And they're just – like you said, Pete is what you see is what you get. Bill is what you see is what you get. Like, people always ask about both guys, what's portrayed in the media and what they put out there is who they are in the building. You know, yeah. Pete's going up and down the hallways on scooters, and you know, and you're in the New England building, and it's crickets. I mean, you could hear a pin drop in that building. So it's two completely different ways of doing things, and they obviously both get results.
When you it's funny. I was talking to Bill Polian years ago, and I said, Bill, I won't go public, but did you ever really whiff on a guy? And he's like, oh, yeah, okay. We got a guard in years ago. I knew 2 practices. I'm like, well, whiffed on that one. Can't play. It is hard because some kids in college can dominate inferior opposition, but when you put an equal up next to them in the NFL, they don't have the soul to burrow through another man. Like, I've told that by players. The NFL scares some guys. They just don't have the stomach for it. Like, Ray Lewis is coming at you.
Right.
I'm out. Is there a position as a scout which you, to this day, it's the hardest position for you to figure out?
I think linebacker was for a long time. And then I was lucky enough to work with 2 guys that won the Butkus Award. I was with Matt Russell in New England for a long time, and then Dan Morgan in Seattle. So just sitting with those guys and watching tape with them on linebackers and trying to pick their brain really, really helped. But like you said, missing on players, I always felt like, going back in the history of the time I was doing it, when you really miss on players and the team misses on a player, you're really missing more on the person than you are the player. Because the tape is the easy part, is watching the tape. It's figuring out the guy and what he's going to do when he's got some money in his pocket and more time on his hands. That's the hard part. I think that's when you miss.
Okay, let's start with Joe Burrow. Joy loves Joe Burrow. My takeaway is, a year ago, he completes 57% of his throws. He is athletic, though not hyper-athletic. He's got a good arm. It's not special. It's not Mahomes. I think we're forgetting that he plays at LSU, which is essentially an NFL factory. I like Tua. I think he does remind me of Breeze, not Baker. Incredible accuracy. When I saw him play LSU on a 70% leg and he was that accurate against NFL DBs, I was like, okay, I'm in on Tua. when you look at those guys, let's just talk Burrow for a second.
Okay.
Should I consider, as a scout, he's playing with nothing but NFL guys.
Well, you know, I kind of made that point last year going through the draft process on Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins. Every time they took the field, they were lining up with better people than the guys they were playing against. That's not the NFL. You know, throwing into huge windows, you've got first-round receivers running everywhere. So you could make that point with Joe. I just think Joe is unprecedented. I've been asked a bunch, like, what do you make of this Joe Burrow thing? And I can't come up with anything. I mean, I've never seen anything like it, this meteoric rise that he's on.
In one year.
When I did him over the summer, I thought third or fourth-round pick. Went to the Manning camp this summer and met him for the first time. Like you said, physical tools doesn't blow you away. He didn't stand out at the Manning camp. But what did stand out was the guy. And that's what's so great about going to the Manning camp, which I couldn't do when I worked in the NFL. They don't let NFL people go down there. So that's been the best perk to me of the Senior Bowl job is I get to go to the Manning camp. But to see Joe like around other alphas and to see who gravitates to who is really intriguing. And what you can't undersell with Joe Burrow is the guy. You know, he's a guy's guy. He's a coach's kid. You know, his dad just retired this past year from Ohio U. So he grew up around the game. You go to the game. You go to LSU. I saw them play Florida and Alabama this year. And you just watch pregame. Like, who responds to this guy? Is it, you know, black guys, white guys, small guys, big guys? You know, it's everyone gravitates to this guy. And it's you see him throw a touchdown and come off the field and see how guys – people go out of their way to get to this guy.
That's
and
fascinating.
And it doesn't – You know, that's the stuff scouts look for when they go to games, and a lot of people poo-poo that stuff, but it's real. I mean, that stuff matters, and those guys play for Joe Burrow. So, yeah, you can look at the physical stuff, and you can pick that apart. Is it overwhelming? No, it's not, but the football player and the guy is overwhelming.
All right, Tua, injury. Would it make you not draft him?
I'd have to have my doctors ask that, but no, that's a tough one. It's going to make a team roll the dice a little bit. You know, that's going to be the intriguing thing is the decision Tua makes. I think he can go and I think he's got four ways to go. He can just come out and force a team to roll the dice on a hip. If he's good enough by July, he could come out supplemental and have a workout and prove to teams, yeah, my hip's good. Or he could come back to school, sit it out, and go through the pre-draft process. So he's got a lot of different things to look at with the injury. But I'm with you. I've always been a fan of Tua. I saw them play five times this year. When he was being recruited by Alabama and I was working for Seattle, everyone in the building said, he's just like your guy. He's just like your guy, meaning Russell Wilson.
Right.
And there's a lot of similarities.
There are.
You know, height-wise, there's similarities.
Russell's a better athlete, I think.
Russell is a better athlete, but they're both springy. They're both bouncy guys. And the difference is, though, like you, if you're a Tua fan, he throws with better anticipation than Russell does, and he sees the field a little better than Russell
does.
Wow. So, but they're both accurate. And, again, I love Russell. I love Russell Leth. I'm not putting Russell down. But those are Tua's anticipation, field vision, accuracy are off the charts.
All right, Jim Nagy, Executive Director, Senior Bowl. I'm so into this stuff. I'm going to go home and listen to this again. I'm just so fascinated. Give me your best right and why you found a guy, small school, guys like me barely know anything about him, and you knew it. And where were you when you found him? And tell me the story.
Oh, that's so self-serving. I can't.
I'll do it. I do it for 3 hours a day.
Well, that's
easy.
Where we're at with the NFL nowadays, by the time you draft a player, there's been seven sets of eyes on the
guy.
So it's gone are the days if you can just claim that you found this guy. There's been a bunch of guys, but really the guys that scouts can hang their hats on is the undrafted free agents, the guys that don't go to all-star games, the guys that don't go to the combine. And just going way back in time, I know you're a Pats guy. Remember Mike Wright, a defensive lineman?
Yes.
He was played there for 8 years. He went to Cincinnati, was a backup level player, even in college till the very end. And I was at Cincinnati this one day, and for the Patriots, you had to look at every single senior. So some teams go in and they only have, you know, a handful of guys earmarked to look at. And I had the clicker in my hand that day. So I was rewinding. Other scouts were like, who are you looking at? And I'm like, oh, I got all these guys to look at. And Mike Wright was really the guy I was rewinding to look at.
Yep.
But he was a 300-pound guy that vertical jumped 38 inches.
Whoa, my Lord.
You know, and he played 8 years. So he was a good role player for a long time.
Any stars, any perimeter dudes?
Stars? Edelman. You know, Edelman was a guy. That was my last year in New England. So to see Julian play quarterback, you knew he wasn't going to be a quarterback. Now it would be interesting if Julian came out as a quarterback. Now that the league's opened up a little bit more to shorter guys.
So you found him?
No, I didn't. I'm not going to say I found Julian.
You pushed for him?
Yeah. Yeah. I pushed for Julian. He was a phenomenal athlete. When you met with the coaching staff, the one thing they said, most competitive guy they've ever coached. So that to me, that's if we're going to take a shot on a guy late, let's take a shot at a competitor.
You know, it's Jim Nagy is joining us, executive director of the Senior Bowl. He's got four Super Bowl rings. You started as a PR intern for the Packers. When you know, some teams, the Saints, draft extraordinarily well. I've been critical of the Patriots drafting. Bill does what he wants to do. Are there people, though, in this league that have what you would call an eye? Mickey Loomis for the Saints appears to have an eye. What is it?
I think there is. I think Jeff Ireland does a great job.
He's done a great job. He got booted out of Miami, and nobody wants to hear this because he's had some controversy.
Right.
He's been great in New Orleans.
He's been great. I think you do. I think guys do have a knack for it. And I think the really good teams, they exhaust the process. You know, our mantra in Seattle was we never have all the answers. I mean, we will push all the way up. We would push all the way up till draft day trying to figure a guy
out.
Whereas some teams, they move on to the next year's draft. They have scouts working on next year's draft before this draft is even here. You know, the teams that really exhaust the process try to get to know these guys. When you spend the spring, rather than just go to pro day and get a 40 time and leave, when you stick around afterwards and take a guy to lunch or take a guy to dinner and really spend time, that's when the teams that draft well really get to know the person. Going back to you, when you get them wrong, you get the person wrong.
Did you like Lamar, by the way? 30 seconds. Did you like him?
Lamar?
Yeah.
I didn't go into Louisville, but what he's doing right now is unbelievable. But I will say this, what Baltimore's doing around him, really buying in organizationally, surround him and like being on the same page with that vision, that doesn't happen all the time. There's a lot of draft rooms where you have a plan for a player, and then you draft him, and then moving forward, it all goes kaput, and the player doesn't work out. So kudos to the Ravens for sticking to the plan.